This is Homefront South Dakota, and I'm here with Al Soleil. Where were you living during the war, and how old were you at the time?
I lived on a farm. I never went to high school or college because times were too tough for our parents to afford to stay in town. So you see, we were out about 10, 15 miles out of town. I worked till I was 20 years old. I worked until I went to the service for odd jobs. About all you could get without an education. And then after I went to service, I went to the first to Fort Knox, Kentucky. That's where the armored replacement and training center was. And then we were there for 2 months, and then I went overseas to Ireland. There we did some training and so forth. There we pushed over the rock walls, and farmers' cattle would get out, and everything. They didn't like that very well. Then we went to England after about 3 months in Ireland, and there we didn't do much but prepare for coming things. We didn't know just about where we were going. We were always kind of waiting for the invasion on the west coast of Europe, France and so forth. But they surprised us, and we went to Africa when we got ready to leave there. And then we went in on Oran, is where we landed with our ship, with our tanks and everything. And there we were fighting the French and the Italians at the time. See, they were coordinated at that time. So the French surrendered then, and also Italy, their ruler got hung in the trees. They hung him in the trees by the Patriots, We got ready to leave Africa, then we landed in Naples, Italy. It was pretty tough going in there. It was worse than Africa. And we fought the Germans up to the main rivers, and we couldn't cross them because they had them so fortified that they couldn't cross. We couldn't cross them, and so we waterproofed all our vehicles, and we loaded them on LSTs, and tanks, and everything, all the infantry, and we invaded Anzio Beachhead, south 25 miles south of Rome. From there. There we were sitting there defending ourselves because of the weather was so wet and rain, so therefore we had to defend ourselves, and they tried to push us off, and they bombed us and strafed us and bombed, but they never made any headways at it. So we kind of stalemate for a month or so, and we make sat still there and defended ourselves until the French front opened up in Europe. And after that, in the same time, we coordinated with the push in France, and we made a drive too, and we took Rome the next day. It wasn't really defended very much, Rome, because they didn't want to destroy it, see? So, but we kept on going as far as we could go, and then finally the Germans held their ground, and we were stuck there. See, and suddenly it got kind of mountainous too there. So we took that, and we kept on going, and it took us slow, very slow going, because they were holding us, But they didn't expect us to make that drive after the France. They had their hands full then. See. Then this course took long months and months. See, when we made the invasion, I think it was in 1943, and it took us all that time to push the Germans back to the east coast of Africa. See, and then the British pushed the Germans out of, I think it was Egypt, and El Alamein. And they come on, and they couldn't fight after they got to out to the desert in Africa. They were starved and didn't have any fuel for their vehicles, and then we captured all those soldiers. Boy, that was quite a job to move that many soldiers out with trucks, you know. And they wanted to start using their airplanes, and they held a corner of Bizerta, which is along the coast of the Mediterranean. And then we got air support, and we shot all their airplanes down. It was just like murder, just one after another, you know. And then we captured the airport, and it took several weeks to clean all that up. And then we moved back to the west coast on a ship at Rabat, and that's where we camped. And from there, we regrouped all. We got replacements for our troops that were captured in Kasserine Pass. That's where they run over us there. And we lost one day, we lost 129 tanks. And if somebody, everybody was designated to burn the tank up, see, so it wouldn't fall in enemy hands. And boy, it was a quiet day and the sun shined, you know, and boy, it sure looked terrible to see all them tanks burn up. And my tank had track shut off, and I got captured then, see. And as I got captured, our artillery laid a barrage of artillery in that area where we got captured. There were quite a few of us in there. And I was on a truck with 10 of our soldiers on there. And the Germans stopped their truck, and they run for slit trenches and foxholes so they wouldn't get killed, see? And we did too. And I went into a slit trench, and they in 30 minutes, they quit, and they didn't fire on our on the German troops anymore, but we were prisoners, see? And they left, see? And I laid in the slit trench. I wouldn't get out. I thought they'll have to come and get me. I always said that I would never get captured. And by golly, they left. They left me lay there. And I finally looked up, and I didn't see a soul around. So I got out, and I run to our line as far as I thought I was going to get shot. I'd rather get shot than get captured. And I run onto one of our half tracks, and they picked me up. See? Of course, I had nothing, but I didn't have a gun or anything. See, they took everything away from us, you know.
What was that moment like for you when you were initially captured? Well, what was running through your mind?
I kept my cool, and I made it back. I just, there was nothing that they never, nobody ever saw me. But at least I wasn't shot at. See, I didn't see anybody shoot at me. But I run like a dog. And then, see, I was, I spoke German, see. And when we captured all these prisoners, they took me in and as an interpreter then. See, I was a gunner before and a driver in the tank. And I was a sergeant at that time. And when I run onto some German people. My dad and mother, they come from Austria when they were 19 and 18 years old, see. And they come to the United States. And of course, that was quite a while. I was 20 years old already. So I had five of us in the family, four boys and one girl we had in our family. We went back through Kasserine Pass, and we camped back there, and we set up a defense line there. And we got new tanks, and they were powerful. We chased them, the troops on the east on our eastern front, and We captured all of them, and whoever we didn't get killed or something like that. And that was terrible. And then we went on north, and then they had us call out one night, and they took all the non-coms and the commission officers out of our divisions, and they sent us back to the States to form another division of armor state and go to Japan. So we didn't like that very well. We didn't know it until we got back to the States what that was for, see. But we who were we? We couldn't tell them what to do. So we was sent back. Only got 7 days to come home for furlough. And I was in there for over four years then already, see. That took us 4 years to go from there, from when we landed in Africa to Italy and up to the southern France. That's where we went from there. See, we even went into southern France. So after that, we come home and we went to Hot Springs, Arkansas. That was a rest home, see, for the GIs coming back from Europe or overseas. I got married in the meantime, you know, and my wife went to Hot Springs, Arkansas, and she worked in the Veterans Administration under civil service. And they had German, Japanese soldiers coming back from prison in some of the Philippines and so forth. And she typed all the payroll for them, you know, and they just looked like ghosts. They were so starved and everything. So, lo and behold, Truman gave orders to drop the A-bomb, and that was the end of us going back and going to Japan. See. Here I run on to my old company commander. He was sent back too, see, and we didn't know that who was going back with us. Hell, he says, what are you doing here? I says, I suppose I'm the same thing you are. So he wanted to know if I wanted to stay in Hot Springs. See, well, that was like a heaven there, you know. We had a dance hall, big mess, hotel. We lived in a 500-room hotel. See, that was a glory. He made me a staff sergeant and a supply sergeant. And he was so tickled to see me. Then after that, that was all. The Japan was lifted, and there was nothing. And after that, things, I think Germany had surrendered already. And I was discharged then, see. But it was all in a period of almost 4.5 years, see, that I spent all that time.
What was the first thing that ran through your mind when you heard that the war was over?
Oh, boy. We sure expected it then, you know, when we found out how bad it was, you know, on the Japs, you know. Well, everybody was so tickled. Shed tears, some of them. Because we were all sweating out going to Japan, and you know, that'd been murder.
So you got married while you were in the service?
After I come home from Europe, yes. Well, I don't know. See, I'm Catholic. I was Catholic, and the priest wouldn't marry us because my wife and a girlfriend at that time would have had to take instructions. So we went to Sioux Falls and got married by a Lutheran minister. And we went to the Air Corps in Sioux Falls, and they give us our blood test. And we only had 2 days left when they did that. And my wife stayed at Olivet in Hutchinson County to do some, she wanted to give them time to get some help to take her place. So I called her from Hot Springs and asked her if she'd care to come. She said, yes, she would. So I lived like a king in Hot Springs, Arkansas until I got discharged.
What made you decide to join the military?
Well, I got my draft notice, see, and I lived at home with my parents on the farm. And first of all, I tried to get I went to the draft board and see if I could get a deferment, you know, and I got it. So at that time, you could go in for 12 months and then you could come back home, see. And I talked my dad into letting me come home and then go back in 12 months, see. After 12 months, they'd call me back again. But in the meantime, before that 12 months was up, there was no return, 6 months plus the duration at that time. So I was stuck then. So I made the best of it. But I kept my cool all the way through the war. And I'll never forget when a sergeant made us blindfold and field strip our guns, you know, in the dark without blindfold, see. And he said, just you can't get out of here until you learn enough to fix, take that gun, tear it apart, and put it back blindfold. He says, you either kill or get killed. That was the instructions we got. And I thought that was pretty severe. I got that. That was my first soldier I got when I picked it up and threw it in the tank. You couldn't take anything with you. You could only sit in there, and there was no room in there. There were six of us in that tank. See, there was a driver, an assistant driver, and a gunner, an assistant gunner. The assistant gunner had to throw the big shells into the, and I don't know how many. I know that I killed quite a few soldiers, but I wouldn't have any ideas. Our shooting was more distant. See, you couldn't tell what you accomplished, see. But we got a lot of Germans, and with your, see, where I was positioned, I was in a position to use a 30 caliber machine gun too, see, from the, and that's why I probably, there was lots of shells that hit us, but we were protected. We had all that steel around us, and that's why I made it home. But there were lots of things that happened throughout that were not very comfortable.
How did you deal with that?
Well, I didn't go berserk like some of them did. We had several of them in our company that they'd get in a foxhole and they wouldn't get out, you know. They had to take them away. We couldn't use them then, see. But as long as you were okay, and if you didn't let it bother you that much, of course it bothered us, but it's just a different kind of life, you know. You never know that you have to go and kill people to survive, you know. Is I felt so bad for those we left behind, and especially that got killed, you know, and wounded.
What kept you going through your years in the war?
Well, you always think about home, first place, but keep alive. That was the big job. If you didn't take care of yourself, nobody else could, see. There's amount, either, just like the sergeant told us, either kill or get killed. So I thought about that so many times, you know, while I was in combat. I was always in combat, you know, unless we'd pull back at night sometimes and fill gas and the tanks and ammunition. It didn't take long to blow that up, you know, fire 30 caliber machine guns and big 20-pound shells, you know. Then we got a bigger tank too, you know. And those were that's a bigger gun too. More firepower is a lot more effective than the ones that we had in our first tanks, you know. But when we started to push back, the things were going different than when we went back into action again, you know. From See, we made it back from Rabat, Africa, to Naples for the invasion in Naples, see. And I don't know, whether, I don't think they expected it. They weren't prepared for it either, but it wasn't as bad as we did at first in Africa. They were fortified there too, you know, real bad. But other than skirmishes, you know, they didn't mount much. When you're in a tank, you can, unless you meet their big tanks, you know, they were tough. They had a bigger gun on their tanks than we did, and they'd always knock off our tracks, see, when they'd hit us, and we'd have to get out. I was captured, not captured, but we got out of our tank 4 times before, and always got a different tank to keep on going. See, they knock off the tracks and you were done. So you had to get out then we always burn up the tanks. See?
What was it like after you came home and dealing with everything that you went through?
Well, I thought I was pretty normal. Because especially after they dropped that bomb in Japan, because I sure didn't feel like I felt like I should have to go back there, you know, and it wouldn't have been very good. Yeah, I don't know how many of them I got because I couldn't count them. But when we used the machine guns, we did pretty well on that. We were fighting with the infantry then, see. And they're not protected like you are in a tank, you know. They were good fighters too, and they had good equipment too, even better than we had, you know. We even had some World War I machine guns and stuff, you know, rifles and so forth. I never had to fight with the infantry other than being in the tank, so that's why I probably didn't make it. I made it back, see. About 2 or 3 of them that we had to get rid of about every week, you know, especially when we were on the Anzio beachhead. Boy, that was, we dug caves and we put trees across and bulldozed a roof on the top to keep from getting hit with the artillery. See, they threw artillery at us all day and all night. Then they dropped these personnel bombs on us, and that was terrible there. But soon you could hear them in the mountains. See, they had a mountain range that run along about 20 miles inland from the Anzio beachhead, see. And then they'd fire on us, and they'd want try to chase us off with that first, and then they'd have run infantry on us, see. Then we, of course, had to defend ourselves with the tanks. We just shot the heck out of them.
What became the high and low points during the war?
As long as I could stay in the tank, I always felt pretty good. But they had chances to get us with their big guns too. See, but we always tried to stay in the forest or trees. See, and we'd have some long shots, and or well, we'd guard a road, see, and we could drive over these. Push them trees over with those tanks, like these trees out here. They had power. They had airplane motors in them, see, at that time. But after that, we had diesel tanks. So they always had, they were really with latest equipment. And we see, we were the first ones to start fighting in North Africa. See, there was no other war as where that's where the war started. See, that's where we started to make the drive, see. And We were always waiting for the Western Front to open. That's when they were bombing Germany and everything so badly that time that they tried to weaken them, knock out their factories and everything out. And we felt like kind of helpless, you know, way down in Africa. And we were hitch it's a storm when we come back. We halfway back to the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when we went to Africa. And the ships just rocked even to the side. They tore down the mess halls and everything, and benches and tables in the ship, you know. And we got down to where the entrance to the Gulf of the Mediterranean Sea there. The ships come from the United States. I never saw so many ships in any time we were out. Boy, that was equipment and to see. That's when we made the invasion in Africa. Then see, we were prepared for the worst. See, and it wasn't as bad as they expected. See, because they had their hands full. Fighting other places, even in Russia, see. So it took time for us to, you know, get Germany to surrender. But they were real good fighters. I don't know why they fought so, but Hitler, he was rough, you know. We had Patton with us.
What did you feel that you were fighting for at the time?
Well, they said freedom of religion and I don't know what the rest of it was, and democracy and stuff like that. That didn't mean as much to us out there, you know. But we fought hard. Everything that we could use to make a. We had then, you know, when in Africa. Because I could speak German, they took me and moved me to the S2, the company headquarters or the division headquarters, to speak German language, you know, to these prisoners that we'd capture. That was quite interesting, because my parents come from German country, you know, and when I before. When we were guarding the prisoners in Africa, they said that we had so many soldiers out there. That's what was really something. Then I had to, they took me along out because I could speak German, and a German officer, and they knew where there were prisoners that were wounded, see, and they took us to them so they could be. Have medical care and some that were dead, you know, we had to bury them. See? And we took some Arabs with us. They had to dig the holes. And you know, it was so warm at that time. This was in April, May, see? And they were so decayed already by the time we got up back there to Then see, they talked to, did not have to speak to German soldiers, see, and there were some of them that were still living, see, and they were helpless, see, they didn't get medical treatment or anything. We had the medics with us too, see. That was kind of complicated after. Of course, we come first at that time, you know. You can't feel sorry for them.
Was it ever more difficult for you fighting because your parents were?
No, it didn't make, I never knew. I knew I had some relatives back there, but I never met them or anything. So it didn't bother me in that respect. But then, when the prisoners were we were guarding them, and they didn't know my superior officers didn't know that I could speak German, but finally there were groups standing in front of our tank. And I spoke the Hungarian German language to one of them. And Boy, he run over these guys. I think guy talks like we do. And then they all come over. They all wanted something to eat. Well, I didn't have nothing to eat for them. They had to wait until they get picked up, to feed them. But that was kind of nice. And then it took quite a while before they transferred me out of the tank. And then I went to division headquarters, which I felt pretty safe then, comparing. We got shelled and everything, but that was nothing like I went through before that,
Did the war change you?
No, I don't think it did. I was sorry that I ever had to do something like that, but that didn't help. I tried to protect myself in all ways, but I took a long time before I could talk about it. I can do pretty well now. I don't like to talk about it. My wife don't like to hear me talk about it, and I don't. There was sometimes that I even give blood transfusions out in the woods where we had a little protection and for guys that got hit with artillery shells and stuff like that, and often wondered if they lived. Yeah, I always thought it was so terrible, that you couldn't stop and help your comrades, but you probably you couldn't expose yourself that way, so you had to stay there. The medics were there for it, but lots of times they couldn't make it, or it wasn't possible for them. But that's why I did that 3 times, laid on top of the tank and give blood, for an injured soldier laying down below, The medics had to be there though to do that, see? And I did that 3 times. They picked on me because I was a sergeant then, and they thought that. And I had the right blood every time, when they wanted it O positive. So we had some of the rangers, that went in on the beachhead and on the in some of the places. I've see when we my mother always sent the little gazette, the paper, once a week paper, to me, And sometimes I get about a dozen of them, and sometimes until, and sometimes a few of them. And I found out that there was a friend of mine that I was working. I worked in a carnival in a bingo stand when I left, before I left. And he read that he had lived in Parkston too. See, him and I both worked for the same man in the bingo stand. And he bought out the whole Midway, and then he was gone. See, we were running the bingo stand with about 4 or 5 men, And then we would, he'd get the paper, and he found out that I was on the Anvil Beach, and he was too. He was with the Rangers, see, this like the infantry, And he looked me up one day when it was raining, and I found it. God, I couldn't believe it. And then that's the only person I met in all that time that I knew.
What do you want people today to remember about World War II?
I just don't want another one to start. There's nothing you can do to. You're just lucky if you don't get hurt or either killed. I never knew what war was like. I found out though.